Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlatnik. Today, it is my pleasure and privilege to welcome Kingsley Charles to the podcast. Hi, Kingsley.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. And how are you?
I'm doing terrific.
Kingsley is another brother from the Collective Genius. I've been working with Kingsley for a number of years. He's a brilliant business planner, tax planner, financial engineering expert, and tax planning and accounting specialist. His firm provides bookkeeping, tax accounting, business planning services, and all of the above. Let me ask you the basic question. What is the best benefits of the most recent tax cut that we've seen? Let's just call it pseudo-Trump tax cut.
The 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was written for guys and girls that are in real estate. Very clearly, the 20% deductibility of earned income from pass-through entities is a direct application for any type of investor. And so basically, there's a 20% haircut on taxation across the board for anyone that's in the real estate, flipping business, development, commercial, and there's no limitation to it. There is a calculation depending on the salary and whether it's passive, non-passive. It really just depends on your structure. But the code itself, one of the main industries that it was targeted at was real estate.
Yeah, I've heard of that one, obviously. But it's not applicable to passive income. It is applicable to active income generated. So if you're running a holding LLC, owning real estate, it is not going to be 20% tax deductible, only if you're an active real estate investor.
Yeah, correct. We use the term in our office, real estate professional, all the time, Mike, and you've heard it before too,
yeah.
Is that the code was designed for the real estate professional, developer, flipper, either on the single family side or the commercial side, it doesn't matter. As long as you're in the business of real estate, it's an applicable deduction for you in some capacity.
Yeah, that's great. And I heard that's applicable not just to real estate, many other service businesses, but it does not cover healthcare professional, does it? Like dentists have heard there's some exceptions. Is that right, or am I mistaken?
Yeah, no, there are winners and losers in it, and I can tell you that I'm on the losing side, is that professionals, services, or trades, or businesses are disqualified if you've got more than about $150,000 of income. And so when you start to look at that exclusion of the specified service, trade, or business, all of the following professions are going to fall into that bucket if you're making more than $150,000 a year. Medical practitioners, lawyers, accounting, actuarial science, financial services, consulting, artists, athletes, any trade or business that relies on the reputation or skill of one or more employees. And so basically, if you're not producing something, you've been excluded. It's designed specifically for manufacturing or transportation, development. It's designed to put Americans to work. Well, I don't know if you've ever, you know, with your community, you ever talked about the domestic production credit, or what we refer to as DPAD. It's been a staple for manufacturers and even for real estate investors. There's a side note, if you haven't been taking a DPAD deduction on your 1040 or your corp, well, not you personally, but your listeners, is that it's gone now, because the 20% discount on taxable income is replacing DPAD. And so if you don't know about DPAD, or you're manufacturing, or you're a real estate developer and you haven't been taking DPAD, you need to check with your tax professional, because you can still fix it on your 16 and 17 tax return. It doesn't exist in 2018. And so I'm telling clients that aren't taking the DPAD, go look at it real quick, because if you're generating $1 million in profit off of real estate, that number could be $150,000. We see it all the time in our office.
Yeah, I was going to ask you best advice ever, but that sounds like one of those great advices. Go back, refile 2016, 2017, and take advantage of the DPAT deduction.
Yeah, if you weren't picking it up, now's your only shot.
The other question that I heard is the latest tax cut allows for some accelerated depreciations for real estate investors. What specifically has been added to this one? Is there some provision for same year deduction for investments or certain investments?
Not on the real estate side that I'm aware of. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist in the code, because the code is pretty voluminous. Is that Section 179 was expanded and also made permanent, which has been sleight of hand every year at the end of the year. And so now we can operate, you know, with confidence on the Section 179 accelerated deductibility.
Yeah,
on the depreciation side, I didn't see any changes at all in my education and training since the beginning of the year on terms of depreciation. You already have in the industry, a comeback on accelerated depreciation. None of that changed in terms of getting a depreciation analysis done, you know, for specifically for commercial property. But no changes in the depreciation schedule.
The fact that they made it 179 permanent is obviously a good thing.
Well, and permanent by the terms of 2025. And like we were talking yesterday about the fact that the tax code is permanent. Is that if there was a change in administration or legislation in terms of control, is that the power still exists for them to make it not permanent. Just as we're looking at the current leadership in Washington, not the president, but the Senate and the House of Representatives, not wanting to make some changes or alterations in the tax plan that may have not been intentional. Is that power still exists within the collective body to go, yeah, it's not permanent. We changed our mind. So as far as we know, through 2025, we won't see any changes in Section 179.
Our lawmakers can decide to change the law any day of the week.
It goes beyond, and we can, you know, I'm waiting for you to ask me about meals, but ultimately, at the end of the day, the lawmakers are the lawmakers. When we talk about tax, is that I usually, when we have this conversation that we're having right now, I usually give a disclaimer. All the powers that be in Washington that it intended to, for it to be whatever it is that they wanted to be in the 27 Tax Cuts and Job Act, whatever it is that they intended makes no difference to the IRS. The IRS operates as an individual body. The IRS will issue guidance on exactly how the tax cuts are to be applied to our financials. And they're slow because they're understaffed giving us guidance because there's so many sweeping changes. The biggest example will be meals. Is the deductibility of meals intact or not intact anymore? Because that's been one of the bailiwicks of all professionals in the tax business. There's an internal debate going on whether or not any of our meals, you know, on the entertainment or management side are actually deductible because the IRS hasn't given us guidance.
So enlighten me on this. Meals and entertainment, I can understand, but what about business lunches? So if it's a legitimate business lunch or business dinner with clients, is that not deductible?
Well, I'm going to tell you two things. One, I just gave you the disclaimer. I will tell you the second thing is that it's so confusing between it's Section 274 in the IRS code. The question is here is very clearly, are meals with prospective clients and existing clients, is that entertainment or is that a separate category? And it's so convoluted that the AICPA sent a letter to the IRS on April 2nd, asking them to very clearly give the industry guidance on what's deductible. So I said all of that for you to understand that what I'm about to give you is interpretation. And I can send you five different websites or five different blogs. They're going to contradict what I'm about to tell you, because the industry is very fierce about what I'm about to tell you. Is it typically going forward in 2018, meals with clients and prospects, your business partner, officers, or directors, we believe that those are 50% deductible. Meals while traveling outside of the normal commute, meals while traveling away from home overnight, 50% deductible. What used to be in-house, what we referred to as in-house meals or meals for the convenience of the employer, employee meals required for a business meeting, meals paid at a meeting or a seminar, food in the office for employees, you know, donuts and coffee. You know, we have this rule in our office, you fly, I buy. to keep people working. I used to pick up the expense, and all of that type of meal that I just described used to be 100% deductible. It is now 50% deductible. And then the only 100% deductible meals that we see on the table are team building, recreational activity with employees. There's a very clear cutout there. Year-end parties, meals for general public at a marketing presentation. Open, if you're a real estate agent and you're selling a property, the food for the open house is fully deductible. And then obviously if you're in the food business or the restaurant business, it's fully deductible. So those are the four types. And what I'm recommending to all of our clients, and it's certainly for clients that we're doing the books for, is we're tracking each one of these meal types separately right now, because until we get guidance, we don't know what the deductibility truly is.
Wow.
The general belief or concern is the gray area is whether or not the client prospect and the existing client portion, because this is where I spend my money, is that I buy meals for my employees and my clients and my prospective clients, because that's where I do business. Our fear is that that type one is going to flip over to the zero deductibility side. And for a lot of industry, a lot of business owners, that's their key purpose. Their key marketing strategy is to entertain.
Wine and dine clients.
Yeah, wine and dine. I'm a huge Tampa Bay Lightning fan. We have season tickets, and those were always deductible for me. But now I'm faced with, you know, looking at the new tax code, I have to make a decision on whether or not that season ticket commitment for my clients and prospective clients is now a worthy expense, because it is now non-deductible.
They like to build complexity. Instead of making it simple, so you don't have to think about it, they make it four different categories so you could break your head trying to figure out where to put each type of a meal. Is this 50% deductible, 0% deductible, 100% deductible?
Well, the thing to remember with the tax code is wherever they give, they take back. You know, so wherever there's leniency in terms of depreciation or accelerated depreciation, it's a temporary gift. As you know, all that stuff recaptures on the backside. So typically when you see a tax, when you see a tax change like this, they're going to give you all the bright, shiny things that make us all feel warm and fuzzy. And then on the backside, they're taking away things that were staples to us as business operators. So where they give, they also take away. I will give you one side note on the meals thing. This is why this is so important. There was a pretty large tax court case last year that specifically went after meals for the benefit of the employee. It was the Boston Bruins. They actually took it all the way to tax court. Both the field agent and the appeals level of the IRS believed that the meals that were being provided for the staff and for the players of the Boston Bruins when they were on the road were not fully deductible, because they were not for the benefit of the employee inside of their own facility. They were having to use hotels in order to feed their travel crew over the course of the season. Both the field and the appeals level denied the deductibility. The Bruins had to go to tax court to win the battle.
That's
how sensitive they won. But this is how sensitive the field level is about meal deductibility. And I think that it's going to become a sticking point with small business, self-employed audits in 2018 and 2019. Is that the IRS has long hated the deductibility of meals. And the reason is because they all know that it's a slush fund for us.
Yeah.
And so I'm fearful that they're going to come hard and aggressive from an audit standpoint. And the only reason I say that is I've been through 70 audits over the last 4 years with clients. I've been through 29, 30 appeals cases over the same period. And we've been in tax court like 12 times. You know, so being right is awesome, but it comes with a cost at times. You know, in order for the Boston Bruins, they obviously had a lot invested in this deduction. It was millions of dollars to feed that crew on the road, but they had to go out and spend the money to go prove their point.
Once the devil knocks on your door and says that we have an audit, you have to prove yourself innocent. That's the reality. Unfortunately, that alone will cost you a lot of money, even if you've done everything by the book and the IRS is just questioning something that's in the gray area. But
well, let's talk about the good news, though. There's still greatness in this Republican plan. I always hate to scare people or get them upset. I'm just the messenger sometimes, right?
Yeah. But let's talk about some of the best strategy advice that you have given, related or unrelated to this tax cut, or generic, because you do a lot of business planning and a lot of financial planning. Give me an example of a really good strategy or advice that you've implemented.
We spent the late Bush Obama regime shutting down C corps. It just didn't make sense to have the double taxation of a C corp in pretty much in any state. There were a few exceptions to that with high income producers in, you know, California and New York, even Oregon. The corporate tax rates made it interesting to take a look at using a C corp, but with 2017 tax reform, they flatlined the C corp rate to 21%, irregardless of the type of C corp that it is. And so if your corporate tax is now capped at 21% at the corporate level and the dividends are still at the 20% level, you now have a 40% double taxation situation, which is comparable to where we were before. So if you're a high income producer, meaning your corporation or your entity is producing north of $1 million, it starts to become very interesting now to look at either changing your structure to a C corp or inserting a C corp into your structure, where at least you can cap the taxation on a portion, if not all, of your income, and then pay the dividends at a later time. Remember, tax codes are permanent. So in theory, until 2025, unless we have a change in administration or representation, is that that dividend rate will stay the same. And so you can actually cut your tax bill almost in half by using a C corp in your structure. I wasn't giving that advice 3 years ago. we were still running away from C corps.
That's the strategy for today for high income professionals. They can pay themselves a salary and avoid double taxation, and pay the C corp dividend corporate taxes, and then don't distribute dividends. That's the basic strategy, and that way, this sort of no double taxation on obviously salaries paid. And the money is taxed only at that 21% corporate level.
Yeah, you got it. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act also doubled the estate exemption back to previous Republican levels. That's another benefit. So it's $22.4 million for a married couple.
So what does it, what does it mean? It means if you want to die, now is the time. Die before
2025. Yeah, die between now and 2025.
I remember this was under Bush. They had 1 year tax complete exemption for state taxes. I can't remember the year it was, but it was a zero tax for 1 year.
I think it was a 1 year dividend redemption.
Yeah. So
it was
all these people on connected, you know, life support were being disconnected that year. They just want to get rid of some people too. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about kind of the economic conditions. And there's been a lot of volatility in stock market recently. The whole spring has been volatility just awoke, and the market has been, you know, up and down. The swings have been pretty significant. We don't know if the bulls have run out of steam or the bears are taking over, or it's just a temporary correction. So the big question is this: there's certainly a perception out there that we might see another correction, not necessarily a big recession, but it is a possibility that the economy will slow down and we'll see some level of recession, economic slowdown, stock market will revert the direction. And then the bond market has always been, you know, nervous about interest rate increases. So if inflation kicks in and stocks start showing signs of weakness, what do you recommend in general, again, for folks? How do they reduce risk? What strategies do you recommend? I'll give you one basic example that I'm a big proponent of, and we, as a fund manager, we make a lot of investments. And we absolutely like strong cash flow deals. Look less for appreciations, more for strong cash flow, because cash flow is the king. You could survive theoretical drop in the value of the asset if you have good cash flow. So just what are your best strategies for real estate folks and non-real estate?
Well, I think you answered the question in the second part of the extension of, you know, what to predict in the market space. I don't think that, I'm not speculative about the stock market bears or bulls. I mean, the stock market is what it is. I'm of the belief that to a certain degree, it's legalized gambling. You certainly look at that in in crypto. The reality is that the bond market is going to drive the corrections or the scares that we're going to see. And that's driven by the deficit that's being created in the background right now. Yeah. Is that the United States government is going to have to borrow a lot of money. And when they have to borrow a lot of money, that's going to shift where the investors are eyeballing safety. Is that if they can get greater returns out of the bond and treasury market, they're going to shift their dollars. That's what's going to cause the instability over on the market side. Whether or not that affects real estate as a whole or inflation has to go for a ride with that, too hard to predict. But I think that we should all be present to there is change or the volatility either up or down or a combination of both in the immediate future, meaning the next 12 months. So typically what I tell clients on the investing side, you know, from your relationship with me, that I am the king of self-directing anything and everything that you can get your hands on. I know it doesn't matter whether it's an IRA, a SEP, a 401k, a defined benefit plan, which is basically an executive pension plan for closely held owners, cash balance plans. These things you can cram hundreds of thousands of dollars in while you're still running your company. And I didn't even mention Roths or HSAs. All of that stuff is self-directable. And so if you can amass cash in that environment, I always recommend to go to your core competence and go where you know that there's cash flow, where you know that you've got growth and there's as little risk as possible. That's why I always say core competence. Is it if you're a real estate investor and you have those funds available, go do your job and be a real estate investor and invest in other projects or cash flow deals that you feel confident in that make sense on paper.
Yeah, that's a great advice. Invest in what you know, what you understand, and what you trust. And there's a risk everywhere, but at least it's a better understood risk rather than market risk.
Yeah, you asked the question, like, what advice do you give to real estate investors, to non-real estate investors? And it's the same thing. When I talk to a non-real estate guy, I'm not saying, hey, you need to go out and learn real estate. I'm like, where's your core competence? Is it in monitoring, you know, cash flow in a business? If you're a strong business operator, maybe you should be investing in another business. Maybe you should become a part owner in another business where you get residual income. Is it you focus on that core competence? As adults and as entrepreneurs, a lot of times we will see clients that chase squirrels. Is that they think that they need to get into everything. They need to get into real estate. They need to get into crypto. They need to get into self-storage facilities. And so they're doing everything piecemeal. And then I'll see an investment in a technology, you know, where I've got a client that has gone in seven different directions because they're taking this shotgun approach as going with the one thing that's true to them and where they know that their core competence is their educational set or passion, which is should be their one thing. A lot of business owners get caught in that rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's a shining object syndrome. Too many people hear about the great strategy of self-storage investing or multifamily, and they have no idea what they're doing, but they want to get into that because somebody else has had some success there.
Crypto is a perfect example. I've got clients that lost 100% in crypto because they bought it at the wrong time. And will it come back? We'll see.
Well, crypto is a legalized, well, I don't know if it's legalized, but it's the modern age. I don't want to call it completely pump and dump, but it's, you know, I
you said it, not me.
Yeah, I remember all these penny stocks were trading on the markets when I was going to college, and people were buying this stuff on a hope somebody else will pay more for it until this thing crashes. Now it's all on the internet, it's all in the cloud. It's all untraceable. It's all out there. It gives people a great opportunity to just lose the money and don't even realize what the hell they're doing. Anyway, let's not talk about crypto. There's certainly great uses of it. Let's very briefly jump into a couple of quick questions, and we're running out of time. So I wanted to ask you, what's the best book that you recommend to listeners? What is your favorite read?
For newer entrepreneurs, I just said it out loud. It would be The One Thing.
The One Thing.
It's by Gary Keller. It'll help you drive your energies to one place and to realize that even when you're successful, so either a successful entrepreneur and you haven't read the book, it teaches you to hone back in on what you're good at. You got to let the rest of your team do what they're good at you know, as a successful entrepreneur, and you have to provide the direction and force for your passion and the one thing that you're successful at, as opposed to trying to tackle everything. That is probably an entrepreneur's worst problem, is that it's you against the world. The one thing would give a new entrepreneur or investor or an experienced one a good refresh on how to run a successful business.
That's a great advice. I greatly appreciate it. Staying focused is incredibly important. If you remember the Star Wars, stay on target. Stay on target. Yeah. And people lose the target when you have too many things up in the air. So that's a great, great book. I guess we are out of time. I very much appreciate all your advice and all your thoughts. Thank you kindly, Kingsley. For folks who would like to get a hold of you, they might need some tax planning or financial engineering advice. How would they get a hold of you? What's the best way to reach you?
Yeah, I'll give you two websites. One for educational purposes, since we were talking about tax code changes. You can hit our blog at kingsleycharles.com. That's KingsleyCharles.com. You can find more information about the 2017 tax reform. We're getting ready to update an article on meals that we were just talking about as well. And then our company operates, the Accenture Group operates off of a platform called Wealthy CEO. And you can learn all about the services we provide as a company at wealthyceo.com.
Thank you, Kingsley, very much. I really appreciate your time and your great advice. Have a great day. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
My pleasure, Mike. Take care, buddy.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to bigmikefund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing, Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.